Call the meeting to order. We have a motion to approve the minutes of March 11th.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of March 11th.
Second the motion.
Any discussion?
No.
Okay. Motion to approve the minutes of March 11th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. I'll sign the original.
Fingers were working.
Chris, this Tata and Howard evaluation for Station 5, 4136.
This is the generator sizing.
Right. Is that, are we taking that from the generator account?
No, it came out of the other.
Engineering. Truck repair, and that was your truck?
Yes, that was the one that was planking while it was on the other road, the Cadillac Convertible.
No, that's right. we finish that up, let's go into water quality.
Did not have any telephone problems with monthly samples. We did have some very high manganese count come from station 5, which I was advised by the DEP to retest on. When I retested it, it came back undetected. I don't know if it was not. I seem to think it might be the sample taps that we're using. We're getting a lot of manganese coming out of the well that's actually oxidizing because we're running them constantly, so as the water's going through, it's coming around with a very high dose of chlorine.
Mm-hmm.
As strong as it'll ever be. So that's where it's taking it out as quick as it can. And I think it's just getting stuck in the pipe, drawing it into the pipe, so when we turn it on, we don't flush it off first and blow it out. Then we're going to get just, you know, residual coming because it's chunky at that point instead of just solid. So I think once we did that, we just blew it off a little and did it. I did a raw water sample and a treated line sample, and they both came back as not intact.
Okay. Did DEP, I mean, did they say anything about did they say anything about the sampling protocol? I mean, did they suggest anything different?
No, they just wanted to take it. They just said that we're going to ask you to do it recycled. It's just out of the norm.
Right.
And it's been a little high coming out every once in a while here and there, but I think, it, you know, the more I think about it, I'm going to go around, flush them all off more. We think this might be the problem.
Okay.
Why are we getting the higher readings?
Hmm.
We won't know actually until the next quarter, which will be
right, okay. Well, sometimes with metals, I mean, we've always used the same, you're doing it the same way, you always have.
Yeah, it's just a secondary contaminant.
With metals, there's a little different protocol, but if they don't recommend anything different than what we're doing, then I'd say you're probably best off just flushing it. All right.
About it. I had one person call, which called since day one, saying that, you know, you gotta come over and flush my area because it smells like chlorine. But in case anybody asked, you know, we're not adding any more to the water right now. This just could be because everything's starting to activate a little more and get used up.
So, what street is that?
Right now, we've just got from, we've kind of consolidated Main Street and West Street and brought everything back towards 28 from there through Old Oyster. And we just started going down towards Station 5. So it could affect anywhere. And all I feel like is we're shutting off the water just to get that human direction flow.
Right.
So all of a sudden the water was traveling one way, might stop traveling and stop bouncing back. So it could kick up anywhere. And all I feel like is
But what street,
trying to be a delicate again.
What street was the complaint from?
Oh, White's Lane.
Oh. Okay.
The dead end.
Right.
You know, and the person lives towards the end. And since we started putting it in, she's been smelling. Very high sensitive. Very sensitive to it.
Okay. I mean, I don't smell it every day, but I do.
I've been over to her house and I can't even get any detection on my kit. And she said the day before it was real bad. Today she doesn't really smell it. So, I mean, it's one of the things where I don't know if she's smelling it one day and not the next. I'm not really sure.
Mm. Okay. Well, some people are obviously hypersensitive.
I did get an email from someone saying about the scheduling of the flushing.
Yeah, and
I forwarded that information to Jen, and she rectified herself.
Yeah, right away. Yeah, she CC'd me in on that. As a woman, I'm not sure where they were from.
I don't know. Really.
What was the question?
Just where to get the current locations. You can go. We have Facebook page now.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to our district website,
yeah.
But it's kind of difficult to...
You don't know until you have a daily schedule set up.
Right.
So you can't have a week or 2 week advance notice.
Right. And stuff has to go out that morning to see where we're going to be or even what we're going to be doing
yeah.
that day.
That monthly?
It's quarterly. It has to be the second month on the anywhere from the 10th to the within 3 days of the last test. They want to get a consistency all the time. It's four different locations, testing locations around, and they test for the halocetic acids and the try out other things.
Mm-hmm.
We're double digits over the notes. It's been like the highest I think we had was like 25, 30, 0.25 or something like that. And they're looking for something up high, 500, 600,
okay.
700, you know, stuff like that. It could be any kind
of right, thing. Like you're pumping pure
right.
chlorine into your system. Okay. Okay. And let's, yeah, we've got plenty of time. Let's do your report.
March of 2015 was $8,834,000. Not much of an increase.
No.
No, $748,000 I have here. Still waiting on the truck crisis that I had Jen talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyer for Plymouth County did throw out the bids that he had on the packing, like the way it was written. He didn't want to get into any kind of lawsuit. So they were supposed to fast track it, and it was on the agenda for the 9th, but I wasn't able to get in touch with anybody to tell me if it was actually taken care of then or if they awarded it or not. So usually there's somebody told me that anybody can bid upon it, they go by the same guidelines.
Hmm.
But
well, okay. All right, well, we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
either way,
you know, I still believe with that amount of money, I'll be able to replace what I got.
Well, I guess we'll adjust it in budget.
Right. And I did tell you about Brian's truck and that I had to get it done and repaired and everything else, and it is actually going in tomorrow or next week to be repaired by now.
For
a little while to get the check from the insurance
bumper.
Company for the bumper and the front quarter panel.
Yep.
The boat. About $3,000, $4,000 worth of damage. So we did get a check though, and it's going down with the guy. We already ordered him all the information. So it's going to be going off now.
Okay. So we're all set with the insurance company,
yeah.
And did you do a report?
Yep.
For the file?
Yep. We have started flushing, like I said a little bit earlier. Just wanted you to know if you get anybody. Sometimes if you're walking to the post office, you'll hear about it. So keep your eyes out for the signs. And you can look on the website, or if you're on Facebook and like this, you'll get a report every day.
Okay.
Tell you what. Tuesday of next week, they will start on Main Street. Putting in one main. They're not going to be doing the boring just yet. I'm still waiting on a couple of submittals on the process of it. I haven't got the okay for that, but they can start doing the ductile pipe. So they're supposed to be starting on Tuesday, delivering the pipe there, and maybe get started Tuesday afternoon, possibly Wednesday morning. So they're finally getting going on there. Same company I have heard and got some phone calls on is going to be putting the water main through the court's property. And hooking up about six new services in there also. Give them all different parts and stickers.
Okay. I saw they had all the drainage structures all laid out. Have they been installed?
Yeah, they've been going to town with the drainage out there.
Good.
And last but not least, on my report, we talked about it 2 months ago, but finally, last week, or at the beginning of this week, on the 7th, we have, if anybody, I only have four of them right now, but if I have the text card in electronic form right now, so I can forward it to anybody who wants to look at it right now. Not the pictures, not the map, or anything like that. It's just, that's the cold form report.
Right.
Quite a bit of suggestions in there. One of them being basically to clean the entire line system up. Work out how to do that. I don't know if I'm going to need to get clean harbors in there or something like that to handle the line that's in there, but even if I pump it down as low as I can, I don't know really who will take it, how I can get it done. We need to get a little advice on that.
Right. So you're saying there's whatever the tank, whatever there's bottom product left in
right.
The tank, it's got to be.
Right. And just for me even to pump them out, I can only go so low.
Right.
And I don't know if I can get, it might be easier to get a company to come in with something to do that than try to get one of my guys to do it.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're not.
Right.
We're not, those guys aren't set up to do that. Ooh. Bring in the pros.
Right.
All right, this is good. Then we'll look at this. This is a draft. It's dated 7. So,
that's just for you guys to take a peek at.
Yeah,
we'll have a call with any questions on it.
Chance to review it.
There are some pictures in there. some of it, I think, is overkill, but, they have to state a lot of it.
Well, we told them we want a thorough report, so
yeah.
I'm glad it's. Okay, that's true. Any other discussion?
Good? No, I'm pretty good with what I got. If anything comes up, I've been extremely busy running around with the new guys. Brian's not going to be here next week and trying to go, so if I didn't get something, I apologize. I'll bring it up if you need anything, and I'll give you what I can. I don't believe I did. I think we're good there. I keep thinking in my head there might be something that I'm missing, but I don't know what it is yet. I might know by the end of the meeting.
No, not according to my notes. That wasn't, we weren't looking for anything else. Okay, great. We have Russ and Greg scheduled for 5:30. I would say it's probably safe to go ahead at 5:25. Why don't you take it over?
Good evening.
Is that on?
Well, to start, for those of you who may not know, I did actually switch occupations or companies, not occupations. I accepted a position back at GHD, which I started there about a week ago. But I did stay with Greensill long enough, and we're still working together very closely on a lot of existing and upcoming projects. So it was a departure on good terms. I wanted to make sure that the plans for the Kootuat water tank were completed and up to everyone's expectations before my departure. So we are 99.9% complete. The stamping engineer is just doing final reviews now and just fixing up some consistency items with the specifications. So I would expect Chris will have those in electronic format within the next week, if not sooner. So those are going to be delivered very, very soon. We had the final review with the Town of Barnstable, the site plan review, which there were no significant comments, no comments that would change the plans. The only comments had to do with minor construction issues. They wanted to make sure that the light would not spill off the property and also make sure that would be returning the road back to existing or better condition, which we're planning on doing. So that was really their only comments. That was the final permit that we had to overcome. So provided this gets a good vote at the district meeting, we should be ready to move forward in the summertime. No changes to the cost. I think it's $2.1 million was the last number and the number that would be safe to move forward with in the future. So the tank's in good standing.
Okay. So that's the number. I did give that preliminary number to the Prudential Committee last month. And but we'll go back with 2.1 as our final.
Yes.
Okay.
I did actually have a conversation. And that's what, were there any questions with the tank before I transition into the fiber optic and the security?
My question is this. We're going to be scheduling an information meeting. It'll be held here probably either the first or second week of May.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, are you available to attend that, or is that a conflict at this point?
I'll talk with Greg about it. Perhaps the stamping engineer may also want to be in attendance.
Or, I mean, unless I'm just saying someone...
Sure.
From the company with a pretty extensive knowledge of the project,
sure.
You know, I would want someone who could respond to questions. Okay. Well, I'm just throwing out. Let's talk about that as it approaches, because we'll have to give you a date and clearly
sure.
Make sure someone's available.
I'll work it out with Chris in the meantime, but I'll definitely be there, and likely the stamping engineer as well will be in attendance.
Okay.
With regards to the fiber optic and the security, I know there's been some frustration with the lack of progress on that front. Gary Ferenkoff, who's one of the engineers with Open Cape, I believe did contact Chris last week with some updates. He wanted to go back out and look at a few things at the site, and I actually had a conversation with him a couple hours ago. The reason for his site visit last week was that he was bringing the electrician who he'd be potentially subcontracting with to put the wires and to look at a few of the sites. And I explained to him that that's good news. I'm glad to see it moving forward. But there was some frustration with the lack of communication and what seems to be progress at a snail's pace. And he acknowledged it. He said, well, that's a lot of these things are outside of my pay grade, was basically his response, which they probably are. Dan's been away out of the office for some time now. Gary tells me he'll be back next week. But Gary felt confident that by next week they would have some numbers put in place for this as we move forward. And I asked Gary to have Dan call me as soon as he's back next week and set up an interim progress meeting so we can sit down and really try to figure this thing out. Even if we did, I was pretty close to looking into Plan B as of a few weeks ago. And even if we did look at a Plan B, ultimately, with Open Cape owning those overhead lines, we still need to have them involved. We can put all the conduit in underground, we can get all the equipment, all the cameras, everything set up, but it's just like any other utility application. When it comes time to connect to it, you're going to need some involvement with Open Cape. So the most favorable approach is to have Open Cape perform the whole project, of course. This is what we've been waiting on for some time now. My best recommendation now is to give it one more month and see if we can get Open Cape to respond with some numbers. But there has been progress. Like I said, there's been more site visits, and I guess we'll have to, time will tell on that front.
All right. Well, I don't think anyone here is going to panic at this point and run out and do something rash in right. the next 2 weeks. So that's encouraging.
The only thing that I would like to know, because I've been in this chair just shy of 2 years now, at the very first meeting I came to, he was here talking about this very topic with plans of getting it done then. So I just need an honest answer. Can he do it or can he not do it? If he can't do it, he's not going to have the time to do it. That's fine.
Let us know.
I just don't want to be strung along anymore.
Understood. Yeah, understood 100%.
Yeah.
I can make that clear. Chris and I can make that clear when we meet with him.
Yeah.
And say we really need to get a cost put in place if by next month.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's been quite a long time coming. At some point, we will have to sit down and take a look at the SCADA equipment and some of the more technical aspects of it. But that's after the fact. That's once we get the contract in place.
Okay. Any other questions? Good.
I'll let Greg come up and talk about the solar.
Okay.
Greg.
How are
you doing? Thank you. I think that the general, I remember about 15% of what we talked about, so I put my put it in writing.
The record, Greg Worson, Greens Hill Environmental. Back on March 19th, we submitted a task order 5 to help the Cotuit Fire District with the preparation of a request for qualifications to explore solar near one of the pumping stations. And so with that, you know, the scope of work that we put together was a one-pager, and it had some costs associated with it, so I really wanted to put together a document to outline really what that means for the Cotuit Fire District. And so when we came and spoke, we said there's a lot of options. Solar is a hot button. I believe that we talked at the last meeting that they're actually developing it in the Bourne Town Forest. Company Beaumont is doing a large array, which was actually developed back in what's called SREC 1, a different program, the first 400 megawatts of that program. We're now in SREC 2, and areas that are not brownfields or landfills or roofs or our carports are called managed growth. And that's where you do large-scale solar arrays on an undeveloped parcel of land or field or something. And that queue is essentially full, but I did want to know that the best value that could be provided to the Cotuit Fire District is obviously a large array from a monetary perspective. Getting the job done would probably be nearly impossible. So money and success of project. And so what we did historically is we looked at some of your electric bills. We looked at the site location and some limitations with respect to easements, your electrical usage that you use at the Cotuit Fire District, not only at the pumping stations, but at your other facilities where you could what's called Schedule Z the power out. And then we met with you before we had 6 feet of snow on the ground. The 22nd, I think, is when it all started to go downhill, I believe. And then we looked at, you know, is Greensill really the best suited company to develop a solar array for you, or is there better vendors out there that are more used to dealing with municipalities? We deal a lot with the private sector, so we felt that even though we could respond to an RFP, what would you have to compare it to? Are we the best if we're only one? I guess we are, but if there was six or seven, then you could actually see what that is. On page 2, I just want to explain a few things about solar. Solar is driven by a commodity called an SREC. It's a carbon credit, and there's factors associated with how you develop it. If you develop a solar canopy or you're on your home, every 1,000 kilowatts you earn one SREC, which is about, I don't know, $250, call it. If you do a building-mounted array, or you do an array where you consume 67% or more of the power on-site, on that parcel, you get a 0.9 factor. So every 1,000 kilowatts, you get $250, multiply it by 0.9, and that's the money you get. Landfills, which you've seen a lot of, Barnstable Landfill, and brownfields, if you do a ground-mounted array, and you use less than 67% of the power, you get a 0.8 factor. It also holds true if you develop a smaller array that is 650 kilowatts, so probably 800,000 kilowatt hours a year, you would earn a 0.8 factor. And then managed growth, which is full, but they're so big that they're cheaper to install, you would earn a 0.7. Why I explain this is not that you're going to get a test on trading carbon credits. It's because when the analyst at whatever company provides a proposal to you, they're calculating the money and the return that they're going to get to see what they can offer you as a community. So we looked at the three things as a large ground mount. I do believe if you did an RFQ, you could ask about it. And some people might say, yeah, we can do it. And it's only if managed growth opens up, potentially in 2016, and potentially if the SREC program still exists. I would probably, at this point in time, discount it. Then there's a ground mount below 650 kilowatts. I believe that you guys consume a couple hundred kilowatts, so you'd have excess power where you could schedule Z out to either the Kootenai Fire District, other uses, or other town usages where you could enter into giving those credits over. That is definitely a pretty good idea. And then the last idea is your on-site load, number three, is 263 kilowatts. So if you take 67% of that, you know, the extra 33%, you could construct something in the 400 kilowatt range, get the highest SREC value, and have a little excess energy to throw around. Might be your best bet with respect to that site. So we felt that we could prepare a request for qualifications, giving some land mass area, some logistics of what exists on site with respect to your electrical infrastructure, and what folks would propose. And what they would propose, I would ask a number of things. One would be size. Two would be how they would get the project accomplished. Three would be the basic economics of what is in it for you. Mm-hmm. And you should always be asking that question, what's in it for me? Do I get discounted power? Do I get some free power? Do I get a lease payment? And you would ask those questions, and what I would request is that you leave that open. We see a lot of proposals out there, especially like landfills, where you're going to do this and you're going to do that, and really it becomes so restrictive that the proposers get very conservative in what they have to offer. So they enter into a win-win situation. If they accept my proposal, I know that I'll be covered if there's a problem. And if there is a problem, I've already vetted that into my pro forma, so I'm not going to lose anything. So asking those questions on the approach and what they would do, remembering that the market for solar changes constantly. And I'm going to give you a for instance. When we were talking on January 23rd in Engrid, not NSTAR, but Engrid, had 60 megawatts of net metered capability. And net metering is important because if you're over a 60 kilowatt site and you don't use it instantaneously, you have to be able to net meter it, either get a credit on your bill or send it somewhere else. Since that date, it not only closed, but there's now 17 megawatts on the waiting list. So 77 megawatts. And that program was a 200 megawatt program since 2007. And they closed up 40% of it in a matter of 2 months. The wonderful thing is you're in NSTAR. There's 100 megawatts left right now. It closes a lot slower. And the reason why it closes a lot slower is that we don't have farms in large rural areas. We're more urbanized, even though in Cape Cod rural, we're more urbanized and developed, which means that you can't find places to construct as you would in the Engrid territory. So there is time. I'm not going to say there's a lot of time, but there is time that if you wanted to do a project,
you could get it in, interconnected, and make sure you get the net metering credits. So you'd ask the other firms on how they would approach it. And why you wouldn't approach it as the owner is just because of what we talked about earlier, which is the tax attributes with respect to the 30% tax credit and regarding the depreciation, which equates to another 30% of the project cost. So 60% of it is really covered in tax law. One thing that you may want to do, and we can talk about this if you move forward, is you might want to engineer, decide on what you want to be when you grow up. Do you want to do 650 kilowatts and do the interconnection process and get yourself approved for net metering so that everyone who is going to invest in this project knows that it will be a successful project. What that does for you is there's a little bit of money up front, but what it does for the developer is they're guaranteed that they're not putting and vetting speculation dollars on a project. So that's something that we should talk about. And if you went to 650 and you decided to cut it down to your 67% of use, the utilities don't get mad when you make a smaller project. What they really get upset about is if you make a larger project, then you go into utility impact studies and things like that. I do think that there is a significant value of putting out an RFQ. As you guys have noticed, the power bills, if you've reviewed your January bill and your February bill, I'm sure this you saw some differences, probably to the tune of 30 to 40% difference with respect to supply. We don't believe that that's going to go down. People ask about natural gas and fracking or if they bring the lines into Massachusetts. I don't believe the utility out of their good heartedness is going to spread the discounts back to you versus to the constituents and the people that make money off of the utility. So I think from the long term, it's definitely something to look at. My suggestion is 650 under. You could ask about larger things if managed growth opens up. There are a lot of dead projects out there, and what you don't want to do is to spend money to have someone present a dead project to you. I touched upon why RFQs and RFPs fail. Too narrow of a scope, especially when we have changing markets. Just like I said, the net metering queue is filling up and things like that. You have to be able to take a left and to take a right as these things turn. When we got funded by a financier in July, there's only three financiers doing the type of projects in the state that we're doing. I think there's probably about 30 right now. And when the net metering queue closed up in NGRID, all these financiers scurry away. So you want to be able to make sure that whoever's coming in has a plan in case things change. I think going forward, it is definitely working with the Kootenai Fire District to talk about what you think would be best for, first and foremost, you. And then if there was excess, what would be good for the community. I believe that, working for a fire district and municipality is highly underwritable. There'll be plenty of people that come out of the woodwork. And then you have to understand what their experience is, what type of equipment. I would recommend, one of two or three inverters. I would recommend that they have tier one panels, which are underwritten and insured in the United States and things like that, that we'd put in the RFQ so they know that you've done your homework and that you're going to have something that's not a brick 2 years from now. Figuring out from you is really what your needs are. And we can vet that. I believe that we can write you a good proposal. We see it on both sides. We're developers on one side, so we know how people might change things. How do they get 10 cents a watt off? Are they using a different gauge copper wire? Are they using a cheaper panel? Are they using a different type of racking? Is it not galvanized? There are a lot of things. So you want to know that so that if it was a system, it would be a system that is going to be longstanding. How's the balance sheet of the people that are going to run and operate it? That should be some of the consideration, but I look at it this way. If the balance sheet isn't that good and they build the system and they default, then you want a system. So it's not the worst thing in the world that you could get a free system out of it. So those are the things that I would look at and get it into the central register. I wouldn't call it necessarily an RFP, though. RFPs, in my eyes, really are low bid. And I don't think that that's what you want. You want best value. And so the ranking criteria really has to be based on versatility, approach, general experience, as well as a potential power purchase agreement rates that they could, maybe you let them give a range, or potential lease payment, you let them give a range for that, so that they're not stuck in, or they're not going to throw the hands up and say, okay, the dynamics changed in Massachusetts, we're going to take a hit, we're just going to walk away. So it's just being understanding of that, I think, is going to be give you the best means to go from your starting point to an ending point, which would be the ribbon cutting and you guys getting the benefits of it. Why I type that out is, as you know, I can certainly entertain questions via email. It's a lot to talk about, and I know that, you know, just as you're talking about, you know, manganese in the water and things like that, a lot of people understand that solar is new, and if you have questions, I don't think any question is a silly question. It should be asked and vetted and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Something we talked about before had to do with the length of time for a lease.
Yes, yes.
So originally you talked about 20 years as the normal lease period, and we are somewhat restricted, as my understanding is, by being a fire jurisdiction being 10 years.
And that is okay. You could do a 10-year lease with a fair market value buyout, where you could get an appraiser that is experienced in Massachusetts with appraising solar systems. We actually are doing 10-year PPAs, which can give you the latter, and you'd have to run it by legal counsel. But what I would suggest is maybe it would be a 10-year lease and you want to do a fair market value buyout, or have the ability to do a 10-year extension.
That's
which
one of the things I was wondering about.
So I would say that in the power purchase agreement, so that you wouldn't conflict with what you have with the Kootenai Fire District, is that you could approach it both ways at your choice, is how I would approach it.
Greg, can I at least change companies? I mean, at the end of 10 years, can we have another company come in and take it over?
Well, yes, but I believe that what you would do, if you had someone else take it over because they have an asset that they invested in, you'd have to do a fair market value buyout of the system. But for operation and maintenance, after 10 years, you have to remember that the attributes associated with the system, and I own systems personally, is I got my tax credits, I got my depreciation, I got electrical revenue, even though I sold it discounted to you, and I had my SRECs, my carbon credits. Once they're gone, the money bubble significantly dries up. So now they're insuring the system, they're maintaining it. So my suggestion after 10 years would be to do a buyout for fair market value with an appraiser, and then do a hire an O&M contractor to run it for you.
So we buy it out and somebody runs it for us?
Sure. I mean, you could do that right now. And you could actually develop the system and bring in tax equity and own it from day one, so that you would get, quote, free power, and you would be selling the SRECs, but you would have to get a tax equity partner. And what it is there's a 30% tax credit, and then they depreciate the system over 6 years. It's called maker's depreciation. They depreciate 85% of the system, so depending upon what tax rate someone is how much money you save. But what they do is they sell that tax equity, which is worth about, they bundle that tax equity, which is converts to about 60 cents, 60% of the dollars. They sell it for about 37, 38%. These guys, how developers work is what they do is they sell the tax credits, they sell what's called a forward, so they know how much money they're going to get there. And then they sell the tax equity, so they know how much money they get there. So their real money that they're investing in this project is only about 30% of their real money. Mm-hmm. And that's how they get bundled together. So my suggestion is you know, 10 years, your inverters will still be good. You could get an extended warranty, or you could request it when it was developed, because the inverters will be good for about 15 years. You'd probably have to do a core change out. Your panels are generally Tier 1 panels, underwritten by a very solvent company with a balance sheet. Those production guarantees are good for 25 years. And as long as the racking devices that are holding up the array are good, I think that you'd be in pretty good shape to, after 10 years, still have a 20-year asset after that. I would say that the life is probably about 30 years. As a matter of fact, some of the appraisers actually take out the system for a 35-year life.
And as technology changes, the efficiency becomes more, these units become more efficient, or is there reach the top?
They, for the first 20 years, they lose about between 0.5 and 0.6% of efficiency a year. So you're going to lose over 20 years, 10 to 12% efficiency, mm-hmm. and then they seem to level off. But you have to remember that the solar boom in the U.S. hasn't been for 20 years. So... this is stoichiometry and a bunch of beady-eyed guys doing some calculations, my guess is, in the lab. Obviously, in Europe, they have some better data sets. But when you talk about efficiency, what if efficiency gets better? What if, well, the system's there. You're still generating X amount of power and saving X amount of money. It's kind of, if you have a Camry, and now they came out with a new 2015 model and it has Bluetooth, you just don't go sell your car because it has Bluetooth. You run.
Okay, we learned that from him back there with his plug.
Yeah, we don't know what to do with the plug at our office, but we do have some rental space now.
Greg, let me ask you this. So, when you drive by a solar array that's built on a municipal site, such as a capped landfill.
Yeah.
Or I've seen others, adjacent to schools. Are the majority of those, or all of those projects structured as a lease? So the municipality just does a ground lease with the
company? Yeah, you can do a combination of both. If you're not going to consume the power, you could do, okay, you use 228 kilowatts and you say, I'm going to do 650 there, they'll lease the land, and then they'll sell you cheap power for the 228 kilowatts, and then the rest of it goes into an account. All it is money, and you get a net metering credit. It goes into your little bank account, and they can do what's called the Schedule Z. And I say, Amy, how would you like some net metering credits? You're a big power consumer. Every dollar that I give you, how about you give me 80 cents back? And it's just a straight, sheer money play. And that's why if you sell power, you have to be licensed in the state as a licensed energy broker. What we're doing is trading credits. All we're doing is taking a monetized amount that goes on your bill, and we're virtually sending it. I say, okay, I want, let's say you use your 228. I want 30%. 40% to go to the Kootenai Fire District, and I want 60% to go to the Barnstable School System. And it'll just break out on the bill. When you get your bill, you'll actually be a little box on there that says from meter XYZ, $300 came from that, and it would subtract it from your bill. So, yeah, and that's what I put in the paper is there's several ways in which you could monetize the benefit. You could lease up the land. I would recommend a combination of both, which is, hey, give us some cheap power. We get savings that way. And by the way, we want a lease payment for the land if we're not going to use the credits. If you were going to take all the credits and they were going to go to your bill, okay, then what you would do is you would transfer the credits to another town entity, and the town entity would remunerate the Kootenai Fire District for those credits at whatever agreement you entered into. So there's definitely a number of ways to skin a cat, and I've seen it all.
Mm-hmm. So you'd be able to give us an idea of how big a system we're going to need to...
650 kilowatts is in the neighborhood of, call it, 3 acres. Generally, a 1 megawatt system is in the neighborhood of about 4-ish. So it could be 3.5 once you take into consideration. I don't know how tall the stands of trees are. There would also be something in the lease that if you did development, obviously development is something that wouldn't shade the array. Mm-hmm. And I have some examples of net meter and credit agreements and ground leases and things that you can look at and enter into. Just because they give you their version of the lease, I don't think that there's not 22 of them else out there that you can get on the internet or from somewhere else.
Right. Does anyone just go out and purchase this equipment
and build it?
And, you know, build it on your own land? And
sure. Anyone that would take solar and the cost of the infrastructure makes sense. Me as an owner, if I go out and buy it, my cost of money for a loan is 5%. With all these benefits, if I can take them, if I have the tax appetite, I can pay the system off and call it 9 years. You'll have solar people come to your house that say you can do it in 4.5, but they don't tell you that, oh, well, that doesn't include O&M. It didn't include insurance. It doesn't include that you had to get a loan. It doesn't include that, you know. So once you take into all those considerations, it brings it out several more years. So the answer is yes. But a department like you, where you're not taking the tax attributes of 60% of the cost of the system, instead of 9 years, it could be 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you looked at a 10-year deal, you're probably getting something that you got the benefit for the number of years, the lease payments, and you got the cheap power that's going to accrue up. And then you're probably buying a system for, you know, 30 cents on the dollar. 10 years out, so you're getting a double benefit in that aspect. If you were a for-profit company and you had a good balance sheet, and the executives of the company were paying a tax bill, I'd say buy it, own it. If you're not taking those types of attributes, I would say at first get a partner because they can take those attributes and then buy it for a song later on.
Mm-hmm.
We do that for nonprofits. It's the same way.
Mm-hmm. I see. So it doesn't make sense to make the investment up front if you're not paying taxes.
I wouldn't think so. I would say that, you know, the only investment that you should make potentially is to get a general design and get it interconnected and make sure that you can that you have the ability to get net metering credits.
Mm-hmm.
And really, expedited interconnection, just to let you know, is the cutoff is 500 kilowatts AC, which is about a 650-kilowatt system DC. And after you go above that tier, then you get into impact studies. You still bear the risk of getting a utility impact study if you go right to the 499 AC level. But I think with you folks, it probably wouldn't happen. The other thing is that I would do a pre-application to see how much distributed generation is already on your lines, feeder capacity. You wouldn't want to go through this whole endeavor to find out that there's already enough solar on the lines, which means that you have to run a feeder for a mile at the tune of $3 million to get you a $20,000 a year benefit. Run into that. One of my mistakes. So I don't think that for you, I would recommend that you would own it right off, but I do think that if you wanted to enter into a 10-year lease agreement with a fair market value buyout after 10 years, or have the ability to extend the terms at your choice, that would probably put you in the driver's seat.
I like that option.
Yeah.
Well, you want to be able to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, well.
My question is, I'm trying to take all this information and understand it and grasp it. And I've been thinking about this for a while. But if we make a presentation to the public here, it may just get very confusing and hard for them to understand that. But what they would understand is how much money, if any, is going to come out of my pocket to get it going, and what do I realize at the other side of that?
Mm-hmm.
That right there is the selling point.
Right, and what that's what you would do. I would recommend doing that after you entered into, you know, you got some good proposals.
Yeah.
Because what comes out of their pocket should be absolutely zero.
Yeah. That's what.
And what goes into their pocket is going to be in the black, not in the red.
Yeah.
And that's a very important attribute to show. And people might say, and you know, I own an environmental firm. I've owned it since 97. I have a Democratic heart, but I'm a business owner with sometimes a Republican mind. And, you know, if people... I'm confused. So the thing that I look at is, you know, folks might say, well, taking down a 3.5 acre stand of trees with respect to the impacts of your carbon footprint. That payback, by the way, with solar, it's 2.5 years. You have a 30-year running system. So that's really what you have to understand. And it is offsetting, you know, fossil fuel use and everything like that on how many gallons of fossil fuels you're going to displace and things like that. So certainly that could be presented to the public, because that's pretty easy to understand that there will be a benefit of that.
How does the tax credit help us?
It doesn't. That's why we discussed a partner. In other words, there's another entity that gets the value of the tax credit, and that gets translated back to us just in pure dollars.
Even if they sold off tax equity, 40% of the entire project cost is in tax equity. For me, when I own my systems personally, because I take it all, I'm not selling it off, 60% of the development costs, infrastructure, permitting, everything, is made back through tax law before I see one penny. Over 6 years, 60% is made back. In the first year, 40% is made back, because I get a 30% tax credit, and I get a big chunk of the depreciation. And so that's really why you need a partner that is a for-profit company to come in here, whether it was us or whether it's someone else. And don't get me wrong, we'd still like to look at the project, but I don't feel right. And with 30B and public bidding processes and things like that, you need to test the waters and see what's out there, would be my recommendation. And there's a fair amount of comparable vendors that would be happy to entertain this project.
We need to pay for our electricity, and if we can share some of it with the district, it's great.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, you're consuming 200 and something kilowatts. If you said that you would buy all the credits and enter into a PPA, my guess is that an all-in cost is, you know, somewhere between 9 and 11 and a half with some form of escalator. So you're really talking about cutting down. Once you add your PPA rate, PPA rate's lower, the lease payment's higher. The lease payment's lower than the PPA rate saving. You know, it's going to be a balance. It's just fooling around with the spreadsheet. So you really have to choose of what you think your win will be. And is it to enter into a lease that has a 2% escalator over X amount of years, so you have a fixed price? Or is it to roll the dice a little and say, hey, 15 years from now, if I entered in and got a 9.5 cent PPA and electricity is 30 cents a kilowatt hour, then I should have done a dollar lease and put it into my PPA savings. Or your dollar cost average between the two. You know, you really can't predict whether, you know, the electrical rates are going to be and things like that. I would bet my money on electrical rates going higher than the general escalator of what you would get in rent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right, I think as long as we're still on new business, we talk about the Santua Tank wireless provider RFP. So we had previously discussed the two things. One is that the in the not too distant future, Main Street Tank will be decommissioned, and there are three existing wireless tenants on that location. The Santua Tank was constructed with the capabilities of accommodating wireless antennas, and also with some infrastructure in the ground to enable running a cable and fiber to connect everything. So with those capabilities, I think that we had decided that it's important to move forward with reaching out to the wireless companies to have them do the analysis and make sure that that location is suitable for what they're trying to do. Okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Russell.
So previously, we had issued an RFP when we first put the tenants on the Main Street Tank. I think that maybe some things have changed since then. It's been about 12 years since we went through the process. And so I think that instead of just bringing out the old document and dusting it off, we may want to take the template that we used but have it updated by a consultant that's familiar with the evolution of that business. So I think based on that, we need to just reach out to either one of the consulting firms that specializes in this. And not necessarily with one of the... there are companies out there now that sort of will master lease the site and then go out and do their own, you know, work with all of the wireless carriers. I mean, that may be an option as well. I'm not 100% sure.
Do we see if they're willing to come up with the changes? I mean, we're not going to, we don't want to hire somebody to make those changes if the wireless people are not coming on, right? What are we going to, I'm not worried about them leaving. But I don't mean to sound like that, but I'm saying to you that are you saying to me that we're going to hire a consultant firm to rewrite the agreements with the wireless?
No, I'm suggesting that we rewrite our existing RFP that we used initially when we went out to bid. Clearly, because of this whole process, this does have to go to bid and... we have to go through the whole process
to move them. It has to go to bid.
Yeah, essentially because it's a new lease.
A new location.
Yeah, and I think one of the questions was we needed to confirm that the location was of interest to the carriers
or somebody. Yeah, I mean we don't.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, there could be other carriers that we're not involved with.
Right.
Or, I mean, vice versa, there could be a consolidation in the works and, you know, two of our tenants may merge and then we, you know, be down to two or, you know, leasing to two entities instead of three. I'm not sure. But I think that it's time that we, all I'm saying is I think it's time to start the process.
Okay. I think it's a good idea, Rick.
Just because of the lease renewal that we recently had, there was a limit in there how much engineering cost they were going to pay for. Isn't there?
Right.
So that was based on the last one, and now we want to get a new one to protect us from stuff like that? That's what you're saying?
No, we're going to make a change.
It's a different thing.
Well, that's a contract with the carrier.
Okay.
You're just talking about a request.
You're just talking about the bid?
Yeah, you're talking about putting out a request for proposal to other carriers or to see if something's
to every. For that tank.
For
stand to a tank.
For stand to a tank.
Specific.
Right.
Yeah.
Not Main Street.
If we entered into new leases for the Santuit location, we would certainly rework it with new language to include what's missing at this point.
Right.
And a roundabout way of what I was thinking.
And that's why I say at the time when we did it, I mean, I would also suggest as it moves forward that we have the lease form reviewed as well just for issues like that, because at the time when that was, the original leases were drafted, we didn't have our standard. I don't think any department had a standard,
right,
for the installations. So that was developed sort of after the fact. And the language in the lease requiring the tenant to adhere to that standard is not clearly defined. So it's sort of subject to interpretation, and we don't have the legal bank to challenge each one of these tenants if they don't want to pay the fees for the standard inspection. However, it's certainly in our best interest to try to adhere to those. So I would like to make sure that going forward that, it's each of the leases accommodates the right for the district to have the tenant follow the protocol that we have in place. So that's all. It's just, after 15 years,
so
whatever it is.
Three tenants on the tank right now.
Yep.
One of them is out this year. One of them is out next year.
One of them is out
the following year.
That was one of the ones that was in the back of my head. He was supposed to have something today to me for
the
one-year
extension.
Extension for
right.
5 years. So it was the same as we did with Sprint. AT&T was doing the same thing. He had all the stuff. I sent him the signature page.
And do they know the tank's coming down?
They want to get this done, I think, by May 2nd or something like that. And I told him, I said, well, I have a meeting on the 16th. You can get it to me then. I can bring it to them to look at. I said, till then. And I said, you're going to have to send me something to send around, and we're going to have to get something sent, and I'm going to have to get everybody to come in and sign it, and I can't guarantee it'll be done and executed by then.
So do they know the tank is coming down?
The person I'm talking to is nothing but a person who all their job is to do is renew the lease.
So it's more of an admin
situation. Right, right. It's one company up in California, and they're handling Sprint, AT&T, and I haven't got anything from T-Mobile, but I'm sure it's coming soon. Probably going to be the same company called MD7.
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep changing names. One guy will be with me for 6 months, and another guy will come in for 6 months.
All right. Well, I know in our conversations with Sprint, we were fairly upfront with them and said, look, the reason we're not going to renew it long term is because there's no guarantee that this structure is going to be here.
Yeah.
That was clear.
Russ, do you have a ball, like a ballpark idea of when you think we might get? I mean, if everything was optimal, when do you think we would get the throwing the dynamite on Main Street tank?
Under optimal conditions, I would say summer or fall 2016. Summer at the earliest in 2016. If they get the new tank built in the springtime, whether or not they can paint it, then you can take it down in the summer. It takes some, through the summer to get the tank painted. In the fall, it might be later on fall or summer fall.
So that gives us enough time to go through the, RFP and then bidding. I'd say a comfortable amount of time, but not a situation that we'd want to put it off for 6 months. I think that it's something that we need to move into.
So,
from everybody I talked to, anyone who from that location, they said that it was a bigger pain to move because of everything. It's not just moving there; it's moving three different sites that have to line up.
That are lined up with that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if it's worth trying to get three representatives from three different companies, you know, from three different companies, and saying, what should we do?
I don't believe that it's up to them. I think all we do is we just use a standard process and say it's out. It's going out. You know, we want requests for proposals. If they don't want to participate and potentially put their antennas at that site, there's not much we can do about it. I know it's been suggested that the Main Street site may be ideal, and that possibly there's a method of building a monopole there to support the antennas once the existing tank structure is gone. But I'm not an attorney. I mean, we could seek a legal opinion on this, but my belief would be that land is not suitable to use. It's held by the district for purposes of the waterworks. It's not held by the district for purposes of cellular communication. If we wanted to, lease space on a parcel for someone to construct a monopole and put antennas on it, my sense is that the land would have to be conveyed from the fire district to another entity, or taken out of being held by the water department, or for what use. In other words, you can't just take water in and do whatever you want.
Yeah,
yeah.
For purposes.
Is that almost the same thing then with the cellular? I mean, with the solar.
We're using the solar to run the pumps.
Yeah, the difference there is that the solar power.
They're not going to be renting anything either.
Would be used for purposes of the waterworks. It's basically power generation to run the waterworks.
Whereas just right now, this is just
revenue
coming into the.
You'll have to run a flag up the cell antenna so that you have radios, but we just happen to have some extra space.
Right. So that's the difference that I see, and that's my that was one of the questions that I had, for Craig, is how these things are structured. I wouldn't, in whatever, this is going to the solar question right now, whatever was structured, I would say that the fire district has to use the majority of that power. I guess if there's excess, it could be put into the marketplace. But
yeah, I think I may give Craig a call. I know they just opened up and had some stuff moved over to a pole.
Solar?
So, no, the cellular. Now I'm back to cellular.
They have it.
Sorry.
Well,
yeah, so, I don't know how they got around that or what happened.
Well, different municipalities have different regulations.
Right.
I'm just citing what I know of the Enabling Act for the Kootenai Fire District.
And the thing about it, they don't really like that. All right. I just saw a scoop up.
Joe, Chris.
Boy, oh boy.
Whether they like the idea of having to move to a different location is going to be irrelevant if the location is not there anymore that they're on right now.
Right.
They're going to have to move somewhere.
Yeah.
And we're going to give them an option. A new tank and then the same thing with that.
Exactly. And if in fact neither of those locations are suitable for supporting, cellular communications in this area, that's not our primary business here.
No.
Primary job is to provide drinking water for
that's
the community.
That's what I was saying.
We've had a great run collecting rent off of that existing structure, and it's been fantastic. While it's been working out, if it doesn't work out,
slow.
You know something, Rick? That's why I was saying to you, I really, I'm not nervous about the three companies that are on that tower, that the Main Street tank, because they go away, I promise you, somebody's counting for Newtown. They'll be there. They'll be there. There'll be five people there.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Yeah. I think that it's within a
certain
proximity of Route 28 that is...
That won't be even be an issue.
Just as
lined up there. We won't have enough room for people that want to go to that thing.
Not only that, they have a structure that's going to be there a long time.
Yeah.
A long, long
time. Exactly. All right, well then let's do this. Why don't we get out the... why don't you pull out the RFP that we used originally, and we'll look at options to have that reviewed. And if you want, I mean, there's a few things we can just check with. We can check with the town of Barnstable and see if they've updated one recently. And even wanted to check with Carl and see what they've done. I know that they have their new, you know, that new structure that they put up within the last 5 years. They've got antennas on that one. And again, this is just for the RFP. I mean,
So when do you feel like we should be letting these guys know? I mean, really telling these guys that, hey, guys.
Well, we can't
do anything
until we make sure we get the money.
Yeah, the district meeting would be the time.
So
do we have them? Oh, we have the money to take it down. I got you.
Yeah.
Right, once we have funding to move ahead.
Once we have funding to build the tank, at that point we can just say, listen, it's coming down within a year.
Right.
Within 2 years or whatever, you know, you make your plans now. We're going to put up this RFP for over there. Other than that, we have safety reasons. We have a report that says we can take it down. We got it.
Yeah. Right.
Because there you go down with it.
Well, no, it's not.
I understand.
Yeah.
I just had concerns that we would enter into some new lease agreement and we wouldn't, you know, they didn't know.
Right. No, that's why we're not doing the new lease terms. I mean, at some point, if the structure no longer exists, then the basis of the lease no longer exists. We're not obligated to keep the structure up there to meet any, you know,
lease
obligation. Basically, if it's gone, it's gone. So,
and we'll know 6 weeks from now what the story is.
Yeah, exactly. But in either event, I think it's certainly prudent to move ahead and locate new tenants on Santua Tank if that is in fact feasible.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Last item we have is the 16 budget.
Okay.
Thank you, Rob. FY 2016 budget. So let's go to the capital plan first because that's shorter.
That's not right.
Yeah, so this the capital plan that we presented to the Prudential Committee for FY16, we had two appropriations proposed. One is for $2.1 million for the construction of a new above-ground storage tank in the vicinity of the West Street tank, and also for the decommissioning of the West Street tank and the Main Street tank, complete package. So, again, as Russ indicated, $2.1 million is the final budgeted number that they've come up with, and there was no... particular discussion with Prudential, so we can move ahead with that. And then the other item was a truck replacement for the 2004 Chevy pickup. And Chris alluded to the fact earlier that he hasn't been able to get the firm bid number due to some complications with the municipal bidding process for Plymouth County. But again, Chris, you feel comfortable that the 30,000 number will be sufficient to get the truck you need?
Yeah. And as long as we write it with either trade and also, I just going to make sure. I mean, that's only going to give you another $1,000 probably, because they're probably not going to need more than that. But I've been walking kind of a little more with that truck right now.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. No, by all means, we don't need to be in the used truck business. Right? Right. It's not what we do. Just trade it in. There's no
trade it being, you know, onto that.
Right. Yeah, we can write it up that way.
I did run them too. I was talking. I guess the chief asked for like 37 for the vehicle. You were at the meeting, I think, the other day?
I was at the meeting. However, I don't know if I noted his.
That cost may include other things in the truck.
Well, that's
radio
what
lights.
That's what I was asking. You know, I don't know what's new, it's transferring stuff from the last chief vehicle over, how they're going to, you know, do that.
Yeah.
Are they getting all new? And I think you might be going a different type, you know, looking forward to like a Dodge or something like that, or a Jeep or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did know, I just noted that they needed a truck. And the same, I think his truck is on an even longer schedule. His may be over 10 years old. I'm not sure. In any event, I mean, it's not a question of if it needs to be replaced. It's just the you know, I don't want to get it funded and then have it turn out to be more money to get it done. All right, so we'll write that article with the caveat that the existing vehicle will be traded in, and whatever monies we get for the trade-in will go towards discounting the purchase. All right, that works. And then as far as the department budget, I presented the sections for maintenance, operations, miscellaneous, and we had some discussion. There was no comments from Prudential Committee that indicated that they would not be in favor of this budget. In other words, there was nothing that they suggested that we eliminate or reduce. I think most of the increases are, well, essentially, it's insurance, utilities, lab pricing, things that are, you know, pretty much outside our control. Without the salary portion, the overall budget is it has an increase of 2.3%. So that's, you know, that's fairly tight, and it's better than we've done in past years. With regard to the salaries, we've had certainly had some changes. I did indicate to the Prudential Committee that our salary section would be considerably less than last year's, although, you know, not necessarily due to pay cuts or anything. It's really because of the office manager overlap. We had funding in there to obviously cover when Sherry left. And then also with operators A and B, those are new hires, and they're certainly starting at a lower rate than our existing operators had been earning. So I think what we need to do is just fill in here. Chris, do you have estimates on the operators' pay that you anticipate for 2016?
I don't have them with me. I know that one gentleman right now makes $17 an hour.
Okay.
He should, tomorrow is his second to last class before he goes in. I would think before the end of the year he's going to be making 18.
Okay.
The other gentleman makes 18 now. Both of them, like I said, we've always done the assumption if they get the license, they'll give a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the past, we've run into that situation where they qualify based on the schedule of their licensing, they qualify for a pay increase. But we haven't been able to, you know, we can't anticipate.
Right. You don't really want to carry that if they're not going to pass the test.
Right. Right. So at this point, at $19 an hour for a 40-hour week, 52 weeks, is approximately $37,500. Does that, do you anticipate that that's pretty much the number we'll be at? Okay.
I got that much for the same thing.
Oh, all right. Let's do that again.
19. Or is it 18?
I went with 18.
Okay.
19
would be 39.5.
Yeah.
18 would be 37.5.
Yeah, okay. So 37.5. And, you know, it's probably better at this point because those guys, previously, you know, where we had the operators were staggered. There was always a difference, and
right. It
was licensing differences. I suppose if they get licensed at the same time, that pay will remain fairly consistent as they go through
right. Their
years of service.
Might be a little different, you know, just at the end. Like right now, one's making 17, but maybe it might be a different time. So
mm-hmm. Right. Okay, but the 37.5.
And $18 an hour is $37.5. And $19 is $39.5.
Yeah, $37.5. Okay, and then senior operator obviously stays the same. Superintendent, we've got, you know, what that number is. Office manager, so now we're coming back to real numbers. I'm thinking back, office manager started at 42.
42. Okay, that's what I thought, yeah.
42 sounds right. Let's see what that is.
I had office manager.
Yeah.
Did we do
42.5
or was it
42? Let me check this. Well, you know what? Where's the warrant? Just to get the there's weekly pay on the warrant. What's the number?
It is $817.20 a week.
Yeah, so that's roughly 42.5.
Okay.
That's 40. It's 42.490.
Yeah.
Something. So 42.5. All right, so then for existing salary, I did some research, and historically, we've gone with an annual increase somewhere between 2 to 3%, and it's based on cost of living and also performance overall. You know, is the job getting done? So I know last year we went with a 3% multiplier for existing employees. And I've gone back and done some, just a little bit of research on the Consumer Price Index, that's, you know, rate of inflation. And I find that the rate in 2013 was 1.5%, and then again in 14, 1.6%. So inflation's been fairly low. I think that if you add the three, you've got a 3.1% increase in the cost of living over the last 24 months. We had a 3% increase last year over the 2012. And so what I would propose, just to keep things in line, I propose a 2% increase for this upcoming budget. So essentially you get, you know, it's 5% over the last 24 months in an environment where cost of living really rose 3%. So there's cost, you know, there's coverage for cost of living, and there's also a little bit of incentive pay in there as well.
And keep them here.
That, right, that, you know, is, I'll say it's discretionary, but I think it's important, in my opinion. So, any discussion on that?
Are the guys, the new guys going to be, do we give them an additional 2 or 3%, or do we just get started here? And when we vote this in, or we make an attempt to give them a raise, do these guys get a raise too?
No.
We just started like 2 weeks ago, right?
Right.
Two months ago.
One guy started a little over 3 months ago. One guy just started a month and a half ago.
Yeah. So they're not involved in this, right?
No. It's certainly not in I mean, they're getting, they have incentive for licensing. They have that. But as far as performance, no. And I think that's why we're facing, you know, we've got the 37.5 number. Is essentially we're carrying them at their current rates into the through FY16. The only increases they'll get would be for, you know, the licensing bonus.
For Chris, Brian, and Jim.
Right. It's a 2% multiplier.
And what's the fire department going for?
You know what? That contract negotiation is ongoing, and I don't know that anybody's even proposed anything.
I could tell you when my contract was a 3-year contract, and we had a fight for 2% a year, and they wanted more, but we were getting 2% a year.
Was it 2-2-2? Is that what?
Yeah.
It was
2% a year over 3 years.
And even, you know, 3 year employees, but you know, I'm talking 2.3 year employees, and the licensing.
That's kind of what we're thinking.
A dollar on an $18 pay is 5.5%.
Right. So, any further discussion on that?
I just go on record. I mean, for me, if we're talking about a percent, I'd rather have a good attitude than 2%. I'd rather give them 3%, just like they always get, and give them a decent raise. They don't even have a living. They're working on $40,000. They're working on $60,000. I'm sorry, that's just the way I feel. So, I mean, you can go and give me all the statistics you want to give me. Go buy something down the store.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not doing that. I'm for 3%.
Well, I think that when...
What are you going to... I mean, I just... What are we... I'm not worried about what somebody's going to say to me in the meeting. Yeah. Give them 3%. They deserve. Yeah.
Do you... beyond just the thoughts, I mean, do you have any anecdotal conversations that you've had with other departments where that's more of a standard?
They're all over the place. Most of them are like 3, some are 2.5, some of them not even giving them raises.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those ones generally that aren't giving up any money have got some issues. You know, things aren't going good. But, you know, I can find out before we nail it down. I mean, you know, I can talk to numerous guys if you want to, but I'm just giving you my personal opinion about what it's worth.
Right.
You know.
Well, I respect your opinion.
It probably isn't based on any facts other than the fact that I like a pretty good attitude. Sure is nice to have a smile on your face, and you're only talking about nickels and dimes here.
Right. Well, I agree. Every time you get into these discussions, it's about...
I don't disagree with you, Rick. I don't disagree with you. You're right on track with where the number's probably supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, I don't want it to sound like a cliche, but it comes down to the needs and the wants. And I guess what we want to do is run the department as best we can and be mindful of the budget and mindful of the increases.
Yeah.
We've got some money back in our pocket from the new people in here, and you can reward your stalwarts.
I do agree that there is there's reasons to increase the salaries at a rate that may be outside of just pure cost of living. I mean, I've always been in agreement with that. And I don't want to be short-sighted and say, you know, well, we've got to trim everything. I think we've done a great job with the rest of the budget. And maybe here's what I would propose keeping in line with what we've already done. We've got a 2.3 increase on the subtotal of the budget. And... keeping in mind, you know, your point, what do you think of the idea of 2.5% on the increase? That would basically give us a consistent, we'd be at probably 2.45 on the overall budget would be the increase.
I'm willing to go whatever you decide. Right. We will vote on it. I just want to be on the board saying.
Yep.
And my opinion is we're responsible to two bodies. We're responsible to the running of the department and the employees, and we're responsible to the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
This is pennies to the taxpayer, but I think it's more symbolic than it is the amount to the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's also symbolic to the employee too that these people have got my back and they care about me and my family and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balancing act. But
well, you know what? Just to back up then, Chris, let me ask you a question. We did have some unusual turnover this past year,
yes.
Like I've never seen, and so our former employees, operators A and B, which going back were John and Ben, when they left, did they cite any reasons for...
Well, John did
change
his
job. He did.
Yeah. He's the one, he asked for a raise in the middle of the year, and he said, we can't give you a raise. We're giving you what we can right now.
Right.
And he didn't like the answer with that, and he wanted to make more money, and he wanted to make it now.
Mm-hmm.
So he went on to become a paramedic, and now he works at Calm, and he makes
a lot
more money than Brian.
Yeah.
So No, it worked for him. Yeah. But,
right, but essentially he changed his career.
Right, he did change his career. Okay. Ben, I think Ben was just getting bored here, but he did owe me more money because he was always a why do we have to get, you know, center here? Why won't they just give us more? Because we do more work on this and that. And
that's pretty much what every employee says anyway.
Exactly. And if you just ask him, you guys know how I feel about Kevin. I know it's being teams, so I don't want to go too much or anything like that, but we've really got a good employee there.
Absolutely.
I don't want to insult her in any way. And everything, and I, you know, just with the way things are going now, I mean, I know you need to take a job right now and do it for the night. So it's not, you know, some of this that's happening or something like that. But, you know, if we could help out a little in any way, I don't want to say I'll take less, but, you know, it's just it, one way or the other. She really worked.
Work more. Oh, you're paying an office. Yeah. You're paying somebody that does all the work for, you know, for you and the whole nine yards that's taking place, paperwork, phone calls, all the stuff that's going on. $40,000.
And
she has every answer every time I call her.
She's learning a Facebook page for us too, and all this stuff, and more communication coming every day. I didn't give you this, but there's your comparison that you were talking about. I can find it till afterwards, but there's the last.
Oh, okay.
Ideas to each other. So she had put together and put in the book here for me.
Oh, okay.
Just in case you needed it.
No, that's terrific. I was actually going to go to the. Well, we need this for Tuesday night.
Yeah. You know, many in a lot of
people look at this stuff there too. But you know, like I said, you guys know how I'm talking.
It, in lots of cases, I mean, the guys that are going to stay in the labor.
I agree with what you're saying.
Generally, the guys are going to stay in the labor in our industry, Chris. You know as well as I do. Is they're not looking to go anyplace. But
right.
A lot of times in these situations where we are, these jobs open up, and guys know that they come in here and they're going to come in this place and they're going to get their licenses and they're going to go. That's the way it works. And then they move on to become assistant water superintendents, superintendents,
yeah,
whatever
right.
it might,
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be.
Right.
I mean, so you know, it's, I know it's hard to pay them, but
okay.
Yeah, the new guys too. Like I said, I mean, I wouldn't think that they would get the cost of living for being there month and a half.
John English,
he came
in from the very beginning, knowing that you know he's going to move. He's
yeah,
going through this thing.
It's the same thing. You know, I find these things out afterwards.
We all do.
They were taking night classes here. And
yeah.
This one was taking college course here on weekends and nights.
Well, it's the kind of guy you really want. You want to keep, you're not going to keep them, you know, $40,000, $50,000.
Right. Well, these guys that I have now, I don't think they're going to move this fast.
I mean, these guys in Mashpee, and so I'm just a little top heavy. I mean, these guys in Mashpee that are working as operators, like the Giacomo and these other guys, they're making $60,000, $65,000 over there. You know, they're making good money. Yeah, but that's it. There's no more. You know, they're at their peak in terms of labor and day to day work. You know.
Okay. Well, maybe you've swayed my opinion. Let me propose this, and then we can have a motion and discuss it if you want to discuss it further. I propose for fiscal 16 that we hold the operator position, so that's 5122 and 5123. At $37,500, and that positions of superintendent, so 5014, senior operator, 5120, and office manager, 5121, receive a pay increase equal to 3% of their existing salary as in the FY15 budget. I have a motion to that effect.
I make that motion.
Second.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Any further discussion?
What about? I guess in the total package, is the overtime budget going to be addressed with this too?
Yeah, overtime will stay the same.
Okay.
Or actually, did we cut it, Chris?
I don't think we have a bucket.
Okay.
All right. Just to have it in case.
Because we have on-call time and we have...
The on-call, yeah. And
we had a big snow year and all that stuff.
Two of the weeks are going to be them guys going to make it 37.5 right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Other than that, you know, I don't get paid overtime. I get paid the on-call, but I don't get paid for the actual overtime.
Right.
So, I mean, right now, our actual budget might even go down a little, which is keeping it basically where it was.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't know if we were going to address 21-14 at the same time, or is that not part of the process here?
Top line?
Yeah.
51-14. No, it's part of the same process. I say all the three positions. 51-14, 51-20, and 51-21.
Okay.
All three would apply a 3% increase. Any further discussion? No? We'll take a vote. All in favor of the motion to increase the salaries for the three employees, 51-14, 51-20 and 51-21 by 3%, and 51-22 and 23 stay at 37,500. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So, okay. Well, that carries then. Unanimous. That concludes our agenda. We just need to schedule two things. One is our regularly scheduled meeting for the month of May, and also we need to schedule an informational meeting with regard to the new tank.
On the on May 5th, I fly down to Port Charlotte or Fort Myers. Close my mom's house up, and I bring her home the 7th.
Okay.
So 5, 6, 7, I'm gone.
Yeah. And 5 and 7, I'm working.
Okay. So possibly something in the week of the 11th. But just as a note, so our regularly scheduled meeting, the third Thursday, would be the 21st.
Yeah.
I will not be available. I'm at a conference all that week.
Can I go a week earlier?
So I think we have to go a week earlier. What does the 14th look like for you guys?
There's no way. I mean, I'll have to make a change because that month, almost every night I'm doing something. So
okay.
To get the work done, I just have to alleviate something else.
Well, I guess the other thing is then, based on the schedule for this building for Freedom Hall, we need to check and make sure it's available. But I'll just throw out, what about May 12th? That's a Tuesday.
Yep.
It's not enough slots on your calendar, Don.
Well, I'm already scheduled to be over at the fire school here teaching them a class that night.
Okay.
And then
13th?
I got time. I'll take the night off from work.
The 12th or 13th?
So you're saying no night is really...
No night's good, but the 13th is better than the 12th or the 14th.
All right, I'll have Jen check to make sure it's available here.
Yeah.
Okay, then, I mean, are you comfortable with back-to-back nights then, and we would go, you know, meeting here and then
if this is not available, we can't meet.
Right. Right. Well,
over there, we can't do it. Is that what the program is? We cannot go there? Or?
Oh, you mean to have our regularly scheduled meeting at the water department? No, that's not. We're here because this is where the boards meet. But
right.
I'm just saying the schedule for this hall for the presentation is what we need to.
Oh, I got you.
We need this building to do that.
And that you're figuring for that one is the same week?
Yeah, well, that's why we were just talking. I mean, it could be Monday the 11th, if that is any better or worse for anybody. I mean, I could.
Done. I mean, the bottom line is, it'd be great, but if you can't make it to the presentation, it's not like you're going to get 20 lashes or anything.
No, but I just it's important for me to try to follow through and all this stuff, so I can. It just depends on which one I have to take time off for.
Well, I'm just saying, rather than have back-to-back nights with the meetings, how about if we go the 11th for the presentation and the 14th for the regular meeting? And that, of course, again, as I said, is
the 11th, 13th.
11th and 14th. That's a Monday and a Thursday.
We'll contact Russell. Let him know the 11th.
Thursday the 14th,
because
the call will be, I think, every Thursday is available for us.
It is.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
So.
I will not be here for the presentation. I've already moved around things to be, I'm going to be in another state that day.
Okay.
All right. But you'll be here on the
14th? The 13th or 14th, I'll be okay.
Okay, so we'll go 14th. For the regular meeting, the 14th.
Right. Well, now I'm going back to the 13th. We can do the presentation on Wednesday night and have our regular meeting on Thursday night. So we all good with 13th?
I'm in. Whatever you want to do. Yeah, I'm good that week. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You just got to call me in the boat, Chris.
Yeah.
Get me off the water.
I just have one question. The Civic Association is supposed to have an
Tuesday, coming this Tuesday.
So it's this Tuesday?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's for budget purposes. It's not.
Do you want me to be there for any reason?
If you want.
Okay.
Just to answer questions. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do there is budget. It's not the right forum to go into depth about the tank. In other words,
yes.
So what we're going to say is, yes, we have a warrant article for $2.1 million. We've given all the reasons for it, we've explained it, but for more information on that, join us on the 13th, and we'll get in the nuts and bolts of hydrostatic pressure.
So it's Tuesday the 21st.
Yeah. Is here, Civic Association meeting.
Civic.
They've, and again, it's not, they've requested that all the boards and the Prudential
Board. I got to mark down those plan outcome
and present the budget. So we have our budget, and what Chris had given me, I'll give you guys a copy of this in the past.
Yep.
We've presented our proposed budget and also provided a look back at some previous years. We've been going back 3 to 4 years. And so one of the questions that came up in the meetings was that people had asked if they could see the actual spending versus what the appropriation was.
Uh-huh.
So with the new reports that we've been getting from the treasurer, they have the actual, going back 2 years anyway. So we can now provide, so what we can give them is this. We'll give them the 16 proposed. We can give them the 15 appropriation because obviously we haven't spent all of 15 yet. We don't know where that's going to come in for actual. And then we can provide an actual for 14 and an actual for 13. And probably, I don't know if we can get 12, but at least 13 and 14 is what I know comes on the report. So, you know, we'll be able to give them a pretty good three-year look at what we've been doing.
Bless you.
And I think that's, you know, that's what people want to see. So that's what we'll give them.
Now, for 13 and 14, we'll have the proposed and the actual side-by-side, or just the actual?
Just the actual. Okay. Because we'll see, I mean, really, our budgets, the actual is very close to proposed. I mean, if anything, well, actually, I don't know of being over too much. I think typically we're under.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that may be reassuring to some people to see that we're not spending 100% of, you know.
And we are turning back a little bit of money this year, too, so.
Yeah.
That's another thing I need to talk to you guys about a little bit, just real quick. The generator money, I didn't get my figures until last month from the girl. It's going to cost $9,000, basically, for a generator. I have 68. I have a chance right now. There's some emergency relief fund money out there that I just got informed about 2 days ago. And that there might be a grant out there to pay for so much of it. So I think it's worth keeping it around for another year, at least, and try for this grant money. If we can get it, it might even be a reimbursement thing, but at least I can, if we have to say, hey, I need, you know, $20,000 or whatever it is to finish this project, but it's going to be reimbursed to us at this point.
Mm-hmm. So that emergency generator is $61,654.
Yeah, that we have that I was planning on using this year. It's not going to get used up before the end of the year.
Okay.
Right.
We had talked about making it a priority, and I talked to the girl, the company that has the municipal bid, basically, and it has to be $150,000 kW.
Yeah.
That's going to go in there because of the engine and everything else that's in there, where originally we had 100. Priced out. So after getting this electric stuff done through Tater and Howard, it's come down to the point where we're going to need a bigger motor in there for everything to work.
Okay. So we can talk about that next month because I'd like to see that estimate.
Okay.
But we don't have to deal with it
right.
In this budget. We can address that. Going into 16. Okay. I got that. That's been a tough one to get done.
I know.
But we find you have all, I mean, you've got all the engineering.
I've got all the engineering.
That's a legitimate spec. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second of all.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.
Okay.